Today on Against the Grain, what is the meaning of life? Can we talk about it in the abstract, or does the meaning of life differ from person to person? Viktor Frankl took up these questions in his classic volume, Man's Search for Meaning, set partly in a Nazi concentration camp where he was confined for 3 years. I'm C.S. Song. I'll talk with the president of the Viktor Frankl Institute of Logotherapy after these news headlines. From the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California, this is Against the Grain on listener-sponsored KPFA and KPFA.org. My name is C.S. Song. Why has a book called Man's Search for Meaning sold over 13 million copies worldwide? Why has this book, written by Viktor Frankl and published in 1946, been translated into over 24 languages? Yes, Frankl was a smart guy. Yes, he was a trained psychiatrist. Yes, he managed to survive almost 3 years in Nazi concentration camps, including Auschwitz. But what did he say in Man's Search for Meaning, which is partly about the psychology of life in the death camps? What did he say that people found and continue to find so inspiring and instructive? My guest today is Robert Barnes, president of the International Board of Directors for the Viktor Frankl Institute of Logotherapy, which is based in Abilene, Texas. Bob is the A.B. Shelton Professor of Counseling and Human Development at Hardin-Simmons University, and his primary mentor was Viktor Frankl, who died in 1997. When Bob Barnes joined me by phone recently, he began with these comments about man's search for meaning.
In 1991, the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., did a study of the 10 books that had had the biggest impact on humanity. Number one, according to their research, was the Bible. Tied for number nine was Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning.
And why do you think it's appealed to so many people over so many decades? What is Frankl trying to do that people have found so compelling?
Frankl is trying to help people find meaning in their life so that we, instead of being poverty-stricken because of having no meaning, he is helping us to find meaning in our life. Remember that meaning precedes purpose. We don't create meaning. Meaning is there for us to find.
Part one of the book, as Frankl writes on the first page of Man's Search for Meaning, is about the inside story. It is the inside story of a concentration camp told by one of its survivors. How long was Frankl in Nazi concentration camps, and in how many camps was he confined?
Frankl was in a total of 4 concentration camps over a period. We usually just say 3 years. Specifically, it was 2 years and 10 months.
And it appears that Auschwitz, and I think much of his book, the first part of his book, is set in Auschwitz. This was, fair to say, where he spent the majority of his time?
Yes, and then he was liberated by a regiment of United States Army soldiers from Austin, Texas, liberated him from the last of the 4, and that was called Turkheim.
How desperate were the living conditions in that he writes about in Man's Search for Meaning? Give us a sense of the adversity that he and the other residents in the camp, of the camp, experienced.
Well, like, for example, physical beatings, but then also emotional beatings. When one goes from being the director of psychiatry and neurology at a large hospital in Vienna to being in a hut, the floor being wet with urine and being starved, what a desperate change. One has to really take command of one's emotions and how to respond to this, and whether to be determined to survive.
Yeah, a big question in the book seems to be whether conditions, whether one's environment determines someone's mental and emotional well-being, or whether a person can in some sense transcend their environment. Where did Frankl, where did he stand on that question?
Well, you were exactly right in explaining that we can allow our environment to overtake us, and that's how we respond, or we can believe that there is purpose awaiting us and use that in a sense of self-transcendence. The hope that we would still be able to do for others is such a wonderful source of energy. For those who felt that there was no purpose to survive for, those people ran into the wire fences and slashed their veins and their arms, falling to their knees and bleeding to death. But those who were, well, you used a magic word there, in self-transcendence, giving to others.
So there was a, as you're suggesting, a chronic lack of food. People were skin and bones. People, of course, have seen pictures of Nazi concentration camp survivors. There was frostbite, sometimes caused by shoes that didn't fit because of the swelling that would happen when people became ill. Beatings occurred on the slightest provocation, writes Frankl, sometimes for no reason at all. Why did a friend who had arrived at Auschwitz before Frankl, why did he tell Frankl that he must shave every day, even if it was with a piece of glass?
Because this would help to maintain one's own sense of dignity. It was as if, defying the guards, one could actually say, you can kill me, but I will not die. No matter what the conditions, a human being still is a person of worth.
And also I understand that he was told to shave because it was all important to look like he was fit for work. Because if he appeared to be in some sort of decay, which might be suggested by, for example, growing a lot of facial hair and kind of losing a sense of one's appearance, that was more likely to result in you being sent to the gas chambers.
He also was trying to, in this sense, even self-transcend in giving others hope, helping them to realize that there was purpose in holding on, purpose in surviving. There may be someone on the outside to love, or a grandchild for whom to set an example. He always focused on others.
So, speaking of others, Viktor Frankl was at one point marching with a group of other prisoners to a work site when the man walking alongside him, it's probably more like staggering alongside him, whispered to Frankl, if our wives could see us now. What effect did that have on Frankl?
His first wife's name was Tilly. He loved her very much. They had only been married from September until the family was deported in December. But he felt that because we are beings of spirit, spirit does not have to transcend through space nor time in order for us to be together. We are never really separated from those whom we love.
So then he was able to imagine himself in that very difficult environment. He was able to imagine himself being with her and talking with her?
Definitely, definitely. Tilly was very much a part of his reason for trying to survive.
So this living in one's past or imagining one's past, how important to Frankl was this escape into the past and into his imagination to surviving, to keeping his spirit alive in the Nazi concentration camp?
In my personal knowledge of my beloved mentor, Viktor Frankl, my primary mentor, I really see him drawing strength from the past, but always, always pushing forward.
Suffering abounded in these concentration camps. Frankl saw it all around him, and he did quite a bit of his own suffering. He talks about suffering as, of course, something that you could just succumb to, but suffering is also presenting an opportunity. What kind of opportunity did this kind of suffering, this involuntary suffering, these people had no choice in the matter, what opportunity did he see involuntary suffering presenting to the human being?
This is a big emphasis of Frankl. Suffering, finding meaning in unavoidable suffering. If you can avoid the suffering, there's no meaning in the task. But if you can find meaning in unavoidable suffering, you find so much strength, and accompanying that effort, you are giving strength to others. He liked very much the example of the young man by the name of Jerry Long. Jerry suffered a diving accident at age 17. He became a quadriplegic. When he returned to junior college, his professor assigned the class to read Man's Search for Meaning. Jerry read that book and wrote a letter to Viktor Frankl. The letter said, "Dr. Frankl, you were in prison. I am in prison. But you have taught me that the accident broke my neck, but it didn't break me." And that same young man went on to earn his, Jerry Long earned his PhD in psychology, became a university professor, and the suffering in his case, remember, since he could feel nothing from the neck down, the suffering was emotional suffering. But he found meaning in that, because it helped him to have purpose in life.
So Frankl, in this concentration camp, in the concentration camps he was in, he saw a lot of people who looked like they were giving up and losing hope. What did he tell them? How did he go about advising them to find meaning in their lives?
Through self-transcendence, helping them to think, was there a purpose to hold on to? Was there a book to write? Was there someone to love? Was there someone to help? All of those questions could be answered today. Thinking beyond oneself.
Did Viktor Frankl, again, we're talking about his classic book, Man's Search for Meaning, did he believe that the meaning of life was the same for every person?
Not at all. Each of us finds our own meaning. The meaning in your life may not be the meaning in my life for me. So how could we possibly say to somebody, this is what the meaning of life is, because it may not help that person at all?
Viktor Frankl also writes about and thought deeply about responsibility, about responsibleness. He said that rather than asking for the meaning of life, a person should strive to be responsible, to answer for his or her life. What does being responsible mean to Frankl?
It means so much that to give you a specific answer that he gave to us, he said, in the United States, on the East Coast, you have the Statue of Liberty. You should balance it on the West Coast by having the Statue of Responsibility, realizing that so much is given to us in life. It becomes our task to be responsible for those gifts, responsible for those potentialities that we have. It goes back again and again to to self-transcendence. He had many thoughts, such as tragic optimism. With tragic optimism, we are able to endure tragedy, according to Frankl, if we can find a positive attitude and learn from the tragedy and share what we learn with others to help them in their tragedies.
So what Viktor Frankl is doing in this book is not just describing the Nazi concentration camp that he was in and the struggle for survival and how he thought he and other people could survive unavoidable suffering. Now, obviously, some people really tried to survive and did their best and succumbed. But another part of this book has to do with a logotherapy, which is his version of therapy, of psychological treatment. A lot of people have heard of psychoanalysis. How does logotherapy differ from psychoanalysis?
Logotherapy is known as the third school of psychotherapy in Vienna. First, of course, was that of Sigmund Freud, who gave us psychoanalysis, searching our past and finding reasons or excuses for them. Freud's younger medical colleague, Alfred Adler, developed a theory of psychotherapy known as individual psychology. Adler's protege was Viktor Frankl, who developed the theory of logotherapy. And the purpose of logotherapy is to lead people into their future instead of, in Freudian terms, lying on a couch and talking about one's past. Instead, Frankl's logotherapy helps people to go forward, always searching for purpose, and that purpose must involve doing for others, going beyond oneself. So of the three Viennese schools of psychotherapy, Frankl's theory, even today, is urging us to go forward, urging us to find meaning in helping others.
That is Robert Barnes. He is president of the Viktor Frankl Institute of Logotherapy.
You are familiar from Frankl's book, one of his books at least, about when Frankl was a young man, a young physician. An elderly physician came to him. Watch this. It's one of Frankl's techniques called attitude modification. This elderly physician came to Frankl, and he said, "I lost my wife months ago. We had been married over 60 years. We were like life's breath for each other. And since her death, I have been suffering so much, I cannot go on practicing medicine. I'm just really suffering and don't know how to handle this. Could you help me, doctor?" Young Dr. Frankl said, "Well, do you think that she loved you as much as you loved her?" And he said, "Oh, definitely." And then Frankl said, "Well, would you rather that you had died first and she was left to survive the way you were suffering?" And this gave a whole new concept to the elderly physician that perhaps his bravely experiencing the loss, the physical loss of his wife, his life companion, perhaps there could be meaning in the suffering because it was he who was suffering and not his wife because he had survived his wife.
I see. So if his wife, he's saying if his wife had survived him, then she would have suffered terribly. So by the fact that he is surviving her, he, in a sense, prevented or warded off suffering on the part of her, and that made him feel good.
Yes, yes.
What did Viktor Frankl think of the widely held opinion that what a person needs for mental well-being is to be in a state of equilibrium?
Well, of course, that's not at all what Frankl suggested or wanted for any of us, because of the fact that we grow from our challenges, and we learn how to respond to our challenges, and in so doing, we We don't tell others how to respond, but they gather strength from seeing how we respond.
Viktor Frankl talks not about the will to pleasure, which some other theorists have. He doesn't talk about the will to power. He talks about the will to meaning. Can you talk about that and what happens when that will to meaning is frustrated?
Yes. In the more than 13 million copies of Man's Search for Meaning, in many languages, Frankl differs clearly from Freud, who said that our primary purpose in life is to achieve pleasure, and then Adler, Alfred Adler, who said our primary purpose in life is to achieve power. Frankl said our primary purpose in life is to achieve meaning, and meaning involves recognizing ourselves as three-dimensional beings, part soma, or body, part psyche, or mind, and part spirit. Frankl chose the Greek word for spirit, noos, N-O-O-S, and refers to that dimension of our being as our noetic being, our noetic dimension. He very carefully uses the Greek word for spirit in labeling our third dimension, our spirit, because so often in the English language, spiritual is mistaken as meaning religious. So our third dimension is our spirit, or our noetic dimension. And this dimension helps us to transcend self and to find purpose. Purpose not only in our past and what has happened to us there and how we can learn from that, but purpose for going forward and transitioning self, doing for others, helping them to find meaning even in their unavoidable suffering.
What did Viktor Frankl think about the fact that so many people he met and talked to were caught in what he called an existential vacuum, that they had a feeling of the ultimate meaninglessness of their life? They had a sense of inner emptiness. What did he make of that? How strong did he feel that this existential vacuum had become in modern society?
And still is. Even though Frankl died in 1997, even this many years later, the emptiness, the void in people's lives, I think increases. And that's why we have to work so hard to help promote his theory, which actually gives direction for how to find meaning. The existential vacuum is partly an individual's fault, the inner emptiness. If we could stop just thinking about ourselves or seeking for ourselves, instead of serving others and finding meaning in that, we would certainly be digging our way out of inner emptiness.
So we have this book, Man's Search for Meaning, by Viktor Frankl. It took me decades to pick up this book. Somebody in high school had once told me I should read it, and for various reasons, I really never got around to it until quite recently. Why do you recommend this book to people? What can it do for them to read about Frankl's experiences in the Nazi camps and also to learn about some of his ideas about how to endure adversity?
Frankl's first book that he wrote after being liberated from the prison camps was known in German as Medical Ministry. Then translated into English, that first book is the book we have today known as The Doctor and the Soul. Then he was urged to write about his experiences in the prison camps. And because he did not feel sorry for himself, and because, quite characteristic of him, he sought no wealth nor no credit for writing this. He insisted on writing it anonymously. And a colleague of his, Abraham Maslow at Harvard, said, no, use your name. It gives it authenticity because you did survive the prison camps. And so what is it worth to us today? It helps us to realize the difference between an empty, meaningless life or feeling sorry for oneself and the significance of self-transcending, the significance of, or the technique of attitude modification and living for others and helping others and realizing that this outlives us, outlives our earthly life. What we have done for others, as he said, our achievements are stored in a granary of what we have done in life, and examples of this are lovingly invested by our Creator in the lives of others according to their own needs.
Robert Barnes, the A.B. Shelton Professor of Counseling and Human Development at Hardin-Simmons University, President of the International Board of Directors of the Viktor Frankl Institute of Logotherapy in Abilene, Texas. Viktor Frankl was a mentor to Bob. Bob spent a lot of time communicating with Viktor, and of course, he has learned a great deal about logotherapy and practices it. And it was a delight to talk with Bob Barnes about this classic volume, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.